Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Late Flag, the aftermatch podcast of the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back at Liverpool's important and nervy 3-1 victory against Sheffield United. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and I'm joined tonight, as usual, by Tom Keegan and Pete Warburton as we reflect on an important win for the mighty Reds at Anfield. So, Pete, you named your team at the end of the last show. And I don't think you were a million miles away at the end, were you, Pete? Which I don't think you had Gravenberch starting because we didn't really know about, Endo having a knock at the time. But I think apart from that, you were virtually 100% right with the team you selected. Pete.
Well, as I say, I think with the injuries to the likes of Jota and that, the front three picked themselves, and it's just a case of whether, like you say, like Endo, we were told he had a knock on whether he was fit enough. The other one was either or, wasn't too sure if Robbo was going to make a start or Joe was going to carry on at left back. But as it turned out, Joe Gomez started. So, yeah, and we've got other names coming back. It was nice to see Curtis on the bench and getting a cameo coming on. Obviously, Harvey Elliott came on again last night, as did Robbo. So, starting to look a bit stronger now. Hopefully, there's no one taking any adverse knocks last night. It was a pretty strong side. As I say, the front three are a shoo-in. Unless any of them get injured, it's a shoo-in. And hopefully, Jota won't be too far away either.
Yeah, Tom, it was, I think, once we heard that, that Endo was a doubt and people started thinking about what the makeup of the midfield might be, I don't think many people would have started with Ryan Gravenberch. I think they might have started, with Harvey Elliott. And I think the other thing to sort of ask, I think it's important now for people, not to underestimate any of the opponents that we're playing, because obviously, it's all about getting the 3 points at the end of the day. And, if you're sort of saying, let's make 5 or 6 changes, and look to the next game, the current game is such as important as the next one. So, with the current situation we've got, where we've still got, some players coming back from injury, it is important, isn't it, that you play what you believe is your strongest team possible for each game now?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, Les. I think on the Gravenberch points, I was a bit shocked to see him come back so soon, but apparently he'd been the one who's been in training longer. So he was, I think, from that point of view, I can understand. I didn't know Endo was hurt at all until I got into the ground, because he got into the ground a little bit late. But I just seen the team, and I didn't know that Endo wasn't on the bench until later on. But Gravenberch, it's funny because these players who are coming back now are going to need games. We've often spoken, haven't we, all of us, about the thing about expecting players to come in. It's very rare a player that can come in after a break and hit the ground running. They usually need 2 or 3, 4 games to get a little bit of the sharpness back. And I think, like you're saying, I don't think Jurgen Klopp is a manager that underestimates his opponents. So he treats his opponents, gives these opponents with all the respect they deserve. But you're right about we need to be strong, because we're gonna need everybody, aren't we, in this last 8 games? Because as the last 2 games have proven, you can't underestimate any side.
Yeah, Pete, and it was, the game started off, and in the first couple of minutes, Kells made a really brilliant save at the back post when a long sort of throw come in and it dropped to a guy at the back post, and he nipped in, and you can say it was a bad miss, but I'd rather say it was a good save, Pete.
Yeah, it was. I thought we tried to out Brighton ourselves there, because we had the slow start against Brighton, and Sheffield probably could have scored in the first 30 seconds with that throw in. And he just seemed to steal in at the back, McAtee. And yeah, I thought how he missed it, didn't know from where I was sitting. I thought he did the post at first. But it doesn't matter how you save it. I mean, it was his right foot. He stuck out and made himself big, wasn't it? And then they had another chance, I think, a minute or so after that. And I thought, you know, I thought maybe we started a little bit nervously or something like that. I'm not too sure. But yeah, it was a good save. You know, you'd expect good saves all the time of Kelleher now, don't you? At least one or two a game. And he made another one later on in the half at the near, like the near post. But yeah, I think once we sort of got over the initial, you know, who are these bloody upstarts coming to Anfield and trying to score against us, and we started getting possession. And I mean, I think we'll speak about it later, but I think that was the most possession that any one team had in a Premier League game. So as I say, it could have started off a little bit of a hiccup for us, but we gradually found our feet and started passing the ball about, you know.
Yeah, it was important, wasn't it, Tom, after that little bit of a nervy first 5 minutes or so that we started to get a grip of the game and started to, you know, to insert, you know, our superiority, you know, and get the game moving the way Liverpool wanted it to move. I mean, they come with the game plan, didn't they, to get everybody behind the ball. And what I noticed, and you might have noticed the same because you're in the cop as well, is they didn't have any real interest in pressing the ball, did they? As soon as we got the ball, they immediately dropped off. So they were sort of giving us plenty of time with the ball, but giving us, you know, not, there wasn't much space for us to try and play through them.
I think the last time, last podcast I spoke about it, you know, like we talked about the slow start. I think it's been the last sort of 4 or 5 games we haven't really come out of the blocks. We seem to be just that little bit, I don't know, hesitance. I thought the crowd was sensational from the start last night. I thought the singing of "You Never Walk Alone" was amazing. So it shocked me to see them come out. And as you say, you know, like they came with the long throw, and like as you say, within 30 seconds, but for a brilliant, it was, it, you know, you've got to say, I mean, this lad has come in and he's stepped up and he's been sensational all the way through, you know, from what he's done. A brilliant save. And then, you know, like, then, as you said, we started to get a little bit of the ball. But we were, I don't know whether what you were saying about them dropping back. I noticed, and I think I spoke to you this morning about the same thing. You noticed that stages in the game, they had 10 men in the box. You know, like, and it's like the given no space, and the sort of, you know, like the showing little ambition, and then starting to break. And I thought Liverpool were like, I don't know if we didn't rush it, but I just thought Liverpool were a little bit naive. The passing was a bit slow, although we had loads of passing. I thought the tempo of the game was really slow. I thought Mo looked like he was not on his game. But like, I think there was a lot of factors, Les, for the first 10 or 15 minutes. But a quick point I'm going to make. I think what you've got to remember, this, like, Sheffield United are probably going to go down. A lot of them players might not come back up. So it was the last chance at Anfield. So a lot of them give their all on the night, didn't he? So fair play to them for the way they started.
Yeah, Pete, Tom made a good point there, didn't he, when he said that, you know, the passing could have been a little bit quicker, but it is difficult to sort of pass quickly when there's very little space in front of you. And they seem to have come with a game plan that, you know, they tried to hit us early in those first 5 minutes. And luckily, Kel's made that save, because if they had gone 1-0 up at that point, then it could have been extremely difficult for us to get back into the game, you know, the way the game sort of progressed. And, you know, you do like the passing to be quicker and crisper, but it's easy for us to say, and I'm sure the players were aware of that as well, because, you know, it's not like it was a game where there was nothing on. it was a game where they knew that, you know, the win was a must. So they're not deliberately slowing it down. It's just that by if you do quicken it up, then you can also cause yourself problems as well by giving the ball away more. So it's a little bit of, you get a little bit caught between two stools, don't you, Pete?
Yeah, I think the word to use, and it's going to be the same for more or less for every game between now and the end of the season. And we are good at it, but we have got to be patient. And I think I've said it before, it's not just the players on the pitch, but the crowd have got to be patient. And I think the crowd understood that last night. I mean, like you say, they just corralled the penalty box, Sheffield United. You could tell from the outset, really, that it was going to be difficult to break them down. And the only way to break them down, really, is to try and get width. If you can get wide on either flank and then get men in the box and get crosses in. If you try and play a little 1-2s through the middle of the park or through on the edge of the box, invariably they'll get a foot in and stuff. So it was pretty evident from the first 5 minutes onwards that's what they'd come to do. And it was quite noticeable, actually. I got in a little bit earlier than I normally do last night. And Sheffield, both teams were on the pitch warming up pre-kickoff. And it was noticeable that they had a line of two of the defenders, the Sheffield United defenders, Holgate and the rest of them. And they were playing balls into a forward. And they were just trying to whip the ball away from behind them, trying to... As they were getting control of the ball, the forwards, the defenders were whipping in. And I think that was their game plan, in the fact that, like you say, they weren't too adventurous going forward. And they weren't really closing us down. They were letting us have the ball more or less until the last third of the pitch. And they were quite happy to just say, come and break us down. But we did create chances. I mean, Mo had a shot that the keeper did well to turn over after he'd sort of fluffed his lines to keep it, and he punched it out badly. I remember Macker having a shot, just went wide. And we were creating, but not clear-cut chances. And it was quite ironic that the first goal came in the way it did. It was a little bit... But I think Darwin deserves that for all the closing down he does. There's been two or three occasions this season. And I remember we got a goal, I think it was against Brentford, where he closed the defence down quickly and he forced the keeper to kick it, you know, wildly out. And his closing down is fantastic, and I think he deserves that. You know, other times you see things like that spinning out of play or not even making the goal. So it was good to see that he got some reward for his hard work last night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Darwin does put the hard yards in, doesn't he, Tom? And it's probably a part of his game that isn't really appreciated by a lot of people, you know, outside of, you know, Liverpool supporters, you know, because he really does put a shift in. He never shirks. And he's done it all his Liverpool career. But this year, he seems to have really learned that he needs to do that a lot more. And that was, as Pete said, you know, that was a real good reward for all the times he's done it and almost closed the keeper down. And it was just a little bit of luck we needed, really, you know, to get that lead and try and bring them out a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the keeper underestimated the pace of him, Les, didn't he? I think, you know, like he charged at him. It was quite clever what he'd done, you know. He turned his back to him but kept his foot high. And like it come off this, well, I only noticed that late after the game. I thought it had come up, it hit him and got in, but it hadn't. He actually hit the sole of his foot. So it was quite clever in what he actually done. But as you said, he never stops, does he? We used to have a joke and call him Captain Chaos, but he's far from Captain Chaos. He's a really, really talented footballer. He's got a good brain. He's got a good attitude. He epitomises everything that you want from a centre forward. He's brave. He never stops. He fights for every ball. You know, like centre halves know they've been in a battle with him right from the way it go. And, you know, he truly deserved the goal. As you said, you thought then, from once we got the goal, you thought, that's it. These have got to come out. these have got to come out now and look for something. But it had the adverse effect. He just went deeper and started going further back, you know, which I thought was quite strange. But like, sometimes you do what you must, or the tactics that you follow. But yeah, it was. I think Darwin definitely deserved his goal for his hard running.
Yeah, Pete, Tom's right there, isn't he? You know, when you thought that might bring them out a little bit, they just stayed in exactly the same shape as they had been. You know, trying to look for maybe set pieces or a quick break. Because even when they got the ball, they weren't trying to it as quickly. It was only if, like, we maybe lost the ball, you know, in our half or something, that they tried to hit us. But they were just playing for free kicks, and they got... What amazed me was... And again, you know, you shake your head sometimes at the way some footballers think. But they got a couple of throw-ins sort of in the first half, towards the end of the first half. And after the chaos they caused with the first long throw, they never used it again. Mm. And you would have thought that when they, you know, they would have looked at that and thought, wow, you know, we've had one long throw. And, you know, it caused chaos. We nearly scored the goal. So if we get any more, we're just going to put them right in. And they never, ever used it again.
Yeah. I think, to be honest, I don't know what Chris Wilder's game plan was, but we were talking at half time and we were saying, these are going to be happy if it's still 1-0 at 70 minutes. Because we knew McBurney was on the bench and we know he's a handful, so, you know, to come on. But yeah, it was strange. I think the only one who tried to show any sort of anything going forward was that lad who's on loan from City, Mackesy. He's a good little player. But Diaz, what's his name? Brayton Diaz. He didn't really show much. And it was like you say, they seemed quite happy just to say, well, we're 1-0 down. And if we can get it to 70, 75 minutes, maybe then we'll start having a go. And in a perverse way, probably they scored their goal early than they wanted to be honest. It was just, I really do think the game plan was hold it to 1-0 as far as you can. And I've seen it happen so many times. It seems to come to Anfield, you know, where they frustrate you. And as I say, because of the way they were defending, we were just having to be patient all the time. But, you know, we were second half, we came out, we were starting to sort of build up a bit. We were starting to look more likely to score, you know. And it sort of went against the grain when they scored. It was a little bit of a break on the right. And I think Joe Gomez missed his tackle on the lad on the wing. And when the ball came in, Dahamer headed it back. And I just think Connor was unlucky. It sort of hit him rather than him playing it, you know. But that was just under the hour mark. And as I say, I think if Sheffield United had chosen when to score an equaliser, they wanted it a bit later than that.
Yeah, because Pete's right there, isn't he? The basically, you know, we needed a second goal before half time that didn't come. And then when we, you know, we come out at the start of the second half, Tom, you know, I wouldn't say we peppered the goal and overworked their keeper, but we had a lot of possession in and around their box, you know, without finding the killer pass or the killer finish, if you like. And, you know, their game plan was basically working because they were still in the game, weren't they? Which is what they actually wanted to happen. And the longer they were staying in the game, the more they were hoping that, you know, they were going to get, you know, a scrappy goal from a break or a free kick or a set piece or something. And as I say, Liverpool paid in a way for not getting that second goal with the amount of possession he had. But you do have to give them a little bit of credit as well for the way they sort of implemented the game plan from Wilder.
I think it was a strange thing. You get into half time, Les, at 0-0, 1-0, and you thought, well, we're comfortable. Because as you say, we'd had, I think, like a half time, I think it was something ridiculous. Like, I think our Paul was saying to me, it was something like 79 or 80% of possession at half time. And we'd had, I think, like five shots on target to their two had come in the first minute. So, like, I think we got caught in a thing. While we're searching for the second goal and pushing the ball forward, we, as you said, we never really played a killer ball, or we never really done anything that was, you know, like making the keeper have to work. And I think I don't know whether Liverpool at that stage thought, well, we could see this out just to the 1-0, or try and get a second goal as they tie it. And we just keep playing like we are, you know, like keep possession, play the ball, try to create a chance, and if a chance comes, take a chance, because they're showing no ambition. And as you say, when they actually got the break and Joe Gomez missed it, and then it turned into a catalogue of errors. And again, from the cop, I don't know if you did this, but from where I sat on the thing, I didn't know young Conor Bradley had put it in. I thought it was a header which had gone in at the near post, at the near post, you
Yeah.
know. But it was only when I seen it later that it did Conor. It was really unlucky. I think Keller would have saved it otherwise, I think. But then that then stung us that a little bit then. And I think, like, rather than negativity from the crowd, which I thought the crowd was excellent all night, I think that increased the volume of the crowd. And then, like, it sort of lifted Liverpool. They sort of come out of the slumber a little bit, didn't they? You know, and they started to show a little bit of ambition at that stage.
I think, Tom, and I'll come to Pete on this in a minute. I think it was the substitutions. I think he was actually taking, you know, Gravenberch and Mo off and replacing them with Robbo and Harvey Elliott. Because as you sort of indicated before, Mo had a disappointing night. And to get Robbo back on at left back, that would have given us pace and energy, you know, down the left hand side. And I thought that Ryan Gravenberch, you know, give all he could, you know, but he wasn't really in the game, was it? And it's as you said before, you know, you need rhythm, don't you? You know, it's the first what people expect a player to start, and you know, after he's been out for a while and play as though he's at his, you know, his prime best, you know, but he's not. Sometimes players need different amounts of minutes in the legs before they hit top form, and that was Ryan's first start really since since he got that horrendous injury in the League Cup final. So you have to give them allowances, you know. And there's some things he tried that didn't quite come off, but it wasn't for the lack of trying for the lad, and I did feel sorry for him, in you know, to some degree, because now people are turning round and saying, you know, the less we see of him between now and the end of the season, the better. But they were saying that a few weeks about Gakpo. We'll come to him
Yeah,
in a
I
minute.
think that's a bit cruel, isn't it, Les? Because,
Yeah.
as we said, the lad, and you know what? I had a conversation with the lad by me. Sorry, Pete, I've cut in just before you there, mate. But I thought,
That's all
well,
right, man.
I had a go with not a go, but was saying to a lad by me, you know what? He's 21, this lad. You know, like he's had a bad injury. He's come back. He hasn't really played a run of games before that, and like, he's in and out of the side, and I think people expect too much, don't they? I think you've actually nailed it there, Les. Sometimes you've got to. I remember having this argument with people last year over Curtis, and they're saying, "Oh, he's useless. Get rid of him. Sell him." You know, like, now nobody says that anymore because he's had a run of games. He's played himself in, and he's proven what he is. You know, so I expect that from the lad, Gravenberch. But you know, like, I think sometimes we've got to be a little bit more sensible with the players. Sorry for that, Pete. Go on.
No, sorry, I was going to say, I'm probably contradicting myself there because you're quite right. I said earlier on that we had, you know, both the players and the crowd had to be patient, but it's right what you say. You only have to have someone have a. I don't think Gravenberch had a bad game in any way. I think, like Les said, he's coming back in after an injury, and sometimes you don't hit the ground running. And it's like you say, it was the same for Curtis. And it was great last night to hear the ovation that Curtis got when he came onto the field, because I think everyone does now appreciate just how clever and good a player he is. Just touching on Sheffield United, I'm thinking again against about the tactics. And you look at the last few results, they shipped six against Arsenal, five against Brighton, and I think five against Villa. And maybe Chris Wilder was saying, we're not going to be expansive at Anfield because if we do, we're just going to get absolutely murdered. And I think that was their plan, and it was to stay in the game as long as they could because they've learned the lesson, albeit too late to stay up. But if you try and go toe to toe with these teams, the likes of the Arsenals, Brightons, and Villas, who are technically better, you're just going to get wiped away. So I think that was probably where their game plan came from. But yet, there was a few people. There's some people. In second half, I managed to get a seat next to me lad further back, and I was sitting with them. And some of them, they don't give anyone any leeway at all for any mistake or any. I think the only thing they levelled at Gravenberch was there were a couple of times that there were 50-50s in the offing, and he sort of shirked out. But I think you can understand that because of the injuries he's had,
I think a few people blamed him for the goal, didn't he? Because there was a ball bouncing, wasn't there?
It was
So,
a bit untidy in the middle, wasn't it?
And he went in for the tackle, and sort of the Sheffield United fella come away with the ball, who then played it out to the right hand side, and the, I thought it was offside, but it obviously wasn't,
No.
and the
I thought he
ball.
looked off, but he wasn't,
Yeah,
no.
the ball sort of, eventually gets played over. And like everybody else on the ground, I thought it had been put in by one of the two Blackburn attackers at the back post. But it had hit Connor and
Yeah.
gone in. Because from where I was on the cop, and you probably had a better view than it than me, Pete.
Yeah, it was on our side. Yeah.
I actually
It was.
thought it was a mistake by Kells. You know what I mean? Because the guy seemed to head it with not a lot of power, and it just seemed to go in. I thought Kells had dived over it.
Yeah,
So
I think what the lad was doing, Hamer, I think what he was doing was literally just trying to keep the ball in play. I don't think he was trying to even set his mate up. I think he was just hell bent because he's not the tallest, the lads. And I think he was just trying to keep the ball in play. And as I say, he headed it back into an area at least that was on the pitch, and it just happened to. I think it hit Connor rather than he played it,
yeah,
to be
no,
honest.
it's just it's him. Yet I've seen it back,
Uh,
yeah.
and and um, as you say, I think if it hadn't touched him, we'd have cleared our lines. Probably Kells would have got it, and we'd have been okay. So it was a bit unlucky in that score, but it was like manna from heaven for them because once they got that, our Jack said to me, "So Christ, Dad," he said, they've got something to really hold on to now,
That's
and
right.
so you start thinking then, and they made a lot of substitutions as well, didn't they, Sheffield? That's nice, and I think they were trying to be clever in the substitutions as well. I think only 2 or 3 minutes after that, we brought, I think Harvey Elliott and Andy Robertson were actually on the sidelines waiting to come on as the goal went in, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
And
Pete, what did can I just ask you, what did you make of, they were, as you said, they were getting ready to come on as that equaliser went in, and then basically straight for knee. Just before the game restarted, we made them two substitutions, taking off, Grav and Mo. And what did you make of those, that
There was a few
substitution?
heads getting scratched when Mo came off, but I mean he didn't have a bad game, Mo. As I say, he made the keeper work on two or three occasions. But he was getting double and triple marked at times, and it was getting really frustrating. It must have been frustrating for him. But each time the ball was coming into him, they were on him like a pack of bloody wolves at time. So it wasn't a big surprise, but there were a few heads getting scratched. I thought with Robbo coming on, maybe Conor Bradley had come off, not because of the own goal or anything, but because obviously with the big game at the weekend, I put Jota right back. So it was a bit. I thought Gravenberch would have come off for Elliott, and as I say, I thought Robbo might have come on for Bradley and switch Jota right back. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see Mo coming off for Elliott and Gravenberch coming off for a fullback. But that's why we are where we are. We've got a manager who knows what to do. I don't think Mo was entirely happy at coming off, but he never is. He wants to stay on the pitch all the time.
Yeah.
But as I say, I think when you get into the 60th minute of a game and you're playing such a big game. Well, every game's a big game, but certainly the United game. Just a few days later, I think you want to sort of preserve your best players as you can, you know. So it
To be
was.
honest, Tom, I don't think it was a case of preserving your best players, with all due respect there, Pete, because at the end of the day, we still had a game to win. Most showed how unhappy he was in coming off. But ultimately, I actually, from where I was, stood on the cop, and from my perspective, I looked and I thought, who could come off here? And like Pete said, I thought he was going to be Joe Gomez and Gravenberch was going off. When Mo went off, I thought, well, fair enough, because I thought Joe Gomez can now move to the six, which moved McAllister up. And Harvey can go on the right-hand side with myself, Conor Bradley, get forward a bit more. And what I thought when the substitution was made, with all due respect to Mo and the Liverpool players, sometimes it's not Mo's fault that he's got three players around him. But is Mia, standing within the, not just in the Liverpool squad, but within the game, I think the players sort of automatically look to give him the ball at every opportunity, when sometimes there's another player who may be in a better position, but because Mo's on the field, they'll give it to Mo. And I think once Harvey come on, the play was getting varied a bit more and the ball was moving quicker. And I don't know, do you agree with that, Tom?
Yeah, I do 100%. As I think that, like I'd said to our Paul as we were chatting, and on the thing, I say what you want about Andy Robbo. I know he's had a bit of a lull in his form since, from the start of the season, and with a little bit of injury with the injury. But him and Trent moved the ball really quickly, and I think they set the when they're playing. They set the tempo by how they play. They move the ball quicker, which enables everybody else to move the ball quicker. And I think Robbo coming on, the first thing he started to do was to start to bomb forward. And as he's bombing forward, then he's making space, isn't he, for Fair? He's making space on the other side for Diaz to start stretching people. So you find that Diaz and Robbo are creating space. So all of a sudden, we're moving the ball much quicker. And you know what? We've said this, I mean, how many times? Harvey comes on and he does, 9 times out of 10, he does improve the team. And he's a clever little footballer. He finds space. He mightn't be the quickest footballer, but he's certainly an intelligent footballer. And I think him coming on in place of Mo give a talk give Sheffield United a totally different problem to sort out,
And I don't think,
whereas
just coming in there, Tom, I don't think they cope with it as well as they cope with Mo, because they didn't
no.
really know there. Because once Mo went off, all of a sudden you'd have players standing around thinking, what do we do now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas they were focused on Mo, and all of a sudden, what do we do now? And all of a sudden, on that side, you had Harvey Elliott, McAllister, and Conor Bradley.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that just changed the dynamic.
You completely, because in the way that I said with Harvey, he's such an for such a young footballer, he's such an intelligent footballer. He's always looking for a pass, Les, isn't he? And
Yeah.
like 9 times out of 10, sometimes you can have a go at him and you say, he play a ball which is like not as good, or he'll but he, fair play to the lad. He's always looking to make things happen. I think he's been a brilliant little player this season. And I
But I
think,
think
like
the other
you
thing,
said, go
just
on.
jumping in, Tom, sorry. I think the other thing with
No,
the
carry on.
substitutions last night, that the last few games where we've made substitutions, it sort of stunted us a bit, and we've taken 5 or 10 minutes to get back into a groove. I think once Harvey Elliott and Robbo came on, it actually propelled us forward better, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, other games where we've made substitutions, We've sort of had a 5 or 10 minute spell where we haven't really looked like creating, or we've been on the back foot. And I think all four substitutes last night that came on, include Curtis and Cody, and that all four that came on had a really big hand in us winning that game. They were all fantastic when he came on.
Do you know what though, Pete? The funny thing is, it's quality, isn't it? We're bringing quality off the bench, and that's, you know, like when you're saying, like with Curtis Gakpo, where you bring in, you know, Harvey and Harvey
Robin.
and Robbo on. It's quality you're bringing on, isn't it? You know,
And
whereas we were bringing
that's
young,
no disrespect to,
inexperienced kids.
yeah, that's no disrespect to the kids, because they've come on and played the
No.
parts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we brought the likes of Dan's on against Luton and things like that, they've all played the
Yeah.
parts. But the bench did look stronger last night, and as I
Yeah.
say, when they've come on and come onto the field, we haven't lost any emphasis at all. If anything, it's taken us on better, you know.
Yeah, Pete, I don't know about you, but you know, when the keeper made that save from Virgil's header, I thought, so I hope it's not going to be, you know, one of those nights, because you could see where I was anyway. You did probably didn't have a good look at this, but Tom would have done as well. When that ball come across for the Virgil header, the sort of gap seemed to open for him. And you could see him lining it up, and he did everything right. He headed it down, and the keeper made a hell of a save. And I thought to myself, you know, I hope that isn't the catalyst for what's going to happen for the rest of the night. And Steve sits in front of me, turned to me and said, "Blooming hell, Les, are you getting the feeling here?" And I say, I sort of shrugged and sort of thought, I don't want to say yet. But you sometimes do just think, yo, is that what it's going to be like now?
You know what Ajax said? Not necessarily after that header, but it was actually just before Maka scored, to be honest. And Ajax said to me, "This has got Leeds United written all over this." Remember when they put
Yeah.
Jesus it with the last kick of the game a few seasons ago? He said, "This
Yeah.
has got Leeds United written all over this." I said, "Oh, for God's sake, don't say that!" And literally within seconds, you know, we got our noses in front. I don't think any of the crowd were totally disheartened, but as the game's going on, I mean, I think it was like 15 minutes to go before McAllister scored. And as you're looking at the clock, you've always got belief in this team. But the way Sheffield defended, I don't know, you just did wonder if we were going to run out of ideas, you know.
Yeah, you know, they were attacking the cop, so we had a really good view of that second half, Tom, from where we are in the, you know, I know we don't sit together, but you know, from our various vantage points, you know, we had a really good view, and the ball just didn't seem to be dropping for us, did it? It had sort of dropped, and a foot would get in the way and just clear as it was gonna bounce. I mean, one ball comes across and Robbo's in at the back post, and instead of him just knocking it back across the goal, he slices it behind, and on top of the Virgil header, you sort of start to the anxiety is sort of, and the nervousness is starting to build up inside you. And then, you know, Jürgen makes, you know, two more substitutions and takes Szoboszlai, you know, and Gomez off, and brings on Curtis and Cody. And all of a sudden, they, as you said, you know, they got into the game really quickly. Curtis just keeps the ball so well. You know, if he brings into his game over the next sort of few games, few seasons, the variety that he can release the ball when it's needed, as you know, as quick as sometimes, as like a McAllister did on at the weekend to make that goal, you know, for Mo, you'll have a complete midfielder player in there. You know, that's one of the parts that's missing. But I thought he was tremendous when he come on. You know, he really looked sharp, didn't he?
Oh, he's a brilliant player, Les. As you said, it's not just his ball retention, it's his awareness, isn't it? You know, like he doesn't give it away. He looks for players. He's always looking for a red shirt. Sometimes we can say he hangs on to it a little bit too long. I often wonder, is he playing to orders, because this is a player with bags of ability. He's you know what? You don't hear anybody say anything bad about him now, do you? We had a fully in our last pod, we had a conversation, didn't we? And we were saying that about Endo, is our midfield for the rest of the season, Endo, Szoboszlai, and Mache. And we were saying, Curtis will have a big say in that. And last night, his cameo that he come on showed you the reason why. Because of his ability to, to not panic when he's got the ball, he knows he'll keep the ball. And I'm going to take up to the build-up. I don't know if we're going to go up to the build-up, but the build-up to the ball is the way he held onto it for the period of time that he did, and then released it, and then the ball bounces off Luis Diaz's leg, and comes across to McAllister, and the rest, as they say, is history. Do you know, like, and someone said so. Jürgen Klopp said a funny thing. At the end of the game, me and our Paul come back. I was wired when I come back. I couldn't sleep. I had to sit down, have something to drink, Horlicks, to try and get myself to think about sleep and watch some of the football, But so Jürgen said he lifted the roof off the stadium, and you can understand why. The utter relief, but not just the relief. You know what? You use the word magician, don't you, for a footballer? But this little fella is a magician. He's a tremendous player. And I know yous are much better on stats than I am, because my memory's not as great as it used to be. Well, someone was telling me the other day, they're telling me today, that that's his fourth goal in five games.
Yeah.
Well, he
You
scored
know,
at Brentford,
like,
didn't he? He scored the penalty against City.
yeah.
And he
Yeah.
scored Brighton and last night, so yeah, it will be. Yeah.
Four in five
And
games. Didn't he score against Man United? He scored against Man United, didn't he?
yeah,
Yeah.
in the cup, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's so four in five games. So now he's adding goals to his game.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting that.
I think the other thing, you have to give Jürgen massive credit for as well, was putting Maka back in the sort of eight role, from the point where we where they got level. I mean, where I was, I mean, I have to say, from where I was in the cop, I was right in line with where he hit that, right? And as soon as he hit it, you knew it was going in. It was one of those shots where you just knew it was going in. And it was a goal on par, I would say, with the Steven Gerrard one against Olympiacos, Pete. It was it just as sweet. It went a bit higher in the goal. The keeper didn't have a chance with it, you know what I mean? But it was one hell of a finish. And I don't know what view you would have got from where, in your positioning with the main stand ultras.
We
But
didn't
on
get
the top, Pete, it was magnificent, wasn't
yeah,
it?
we didn't get the trajectory of the play because we're, as I say, we're down on the 18-yard line of the road end and that. But Christ, the power in that shot. And a few people were saying, you could hear people as we were coming out the ground, and all as we were saying is that was like Olympiakos, that was like Olympiakos. The way we hit it, but it was just the ferocity of the shots. It's a wonder the net didn't just fly, It's a wonder he
Yeah.
didn't take the actual goal off its hinges, to be honest, because it just seemed to hit the back of the net as it left his foot. It was that ferocious, the shot. But like you say, there was an outpouring of not just glee because we'd scored such a good goal, but there was tinged with relief there because, as I say, we were looking up at the clock and it was ticking round and we were thinking, there's the last 15, 12 minutes to go. Are we going to break through here? And I'm sure it was on the minds of the Sheffield United fans and the Sheffield United players that they were, that far away. I don't think, in fairness, a point would have helped the cause. I don't even think 3 points
No,
would have helped the cause,
I think it was more the Man City and Arsenal fans who were watching
Yeah.
that and sort of,
Yeah.
turning the telly off and thinking, bloody hell, it's 1-1. There's only 15 minutes to go here. That it was gonna affect more than the Sheffield United, to be honest. For them, it was just gonna be a bonus for them to talk about Pete, you know what I mean? Or
I mean,
or their best
I think
in you know, at the sea away day of the season or something like that.
if you ask Chris Wilder, or in any interviews Chris Wilder would get, he's obviously going to say, until it's mathematically impossible, we're going to fight for every point. I think privately, if you ask him, I think he knows the down now, in fairness. And I think any hardened Sheffield United fan would agree with that. I think it's gone too far. And I think at the bottom there, I think that them and Burnley are set. And I'm not too sure. Luton always wants to think,
honest,
you know,
Pete,
you think they're going to get out of it. But I don't know if they will.
I don't think Burnley are a sort of odds on yet. They might be if they lose to Everton tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if Burnley should win at Everton tomorrow with a pendant points deduction coming for Everton, if Everton gets something like a 4, 5, 6 point deduction, that puts Burnley right back into the frame to stay up. Because I think it's a massive game for Burnley tomorrow, but that's just diverting a little bit. So we'll just move on. So the relief, I have to say, the relief around us on the cop was there for everybody to see. You could just see the, you know, a big weight lifting from everybody's shoulders when that at the back of the net, and you thought, right, let's get another one. And they sort of tried to sort of push us back a little bit without really doing anything. Kells had one save to make, which he, you know, he made quite comfortably. And then, you know, Liverpool strived to get the, you know, the third goal. And then right on 90 minutes, what a lovely header by Cody Gakpo, and a magnificent cross by Robbo, Tom.
Yeah.
That sort of really put the points, you know, to bed. You know, it was strange, wasn't it? Because, like, we scored just at the point where the board was going up for the added time. And people were thinking, you know, how long is it going to be added on here? And most people sort of, you know, guess was 10 minutes. When 7 come up, because we were 2-1 ahead and then we quickly went 3-1 ahead, everybody was quite happy with the 7 minutes. But I was just thinking then, had it still been 1-1 at that time, we would not have been happy with only 7 minutes going on, let's be honest.
It was a great cross, Les, wasn't it? It was a brilliant cross by Andy Robbo. But you know what? It was a quality. Here's another lad who's a brilliant player. You know, he's not really had a proper run of games in the team, because, you know, like, we're not sure about the position, that the best position for him in the team. But you know what? When he comes on, you know, he's always a threat, isn't he? And do you know what, Les? It was a brilliant header. It really was. He timed his run to perfection, absolute perfection, and then put the header away, right? So, you know, like a proper centre forward's header, into the ground and into the net, you know, like a well away from the keeper. He was never going to save it. And I have to give an honourable mention as well, just before we finish this little bit, about for McAllister's free kick.
Yeah,
you know,
it took a deflection, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah, oh my God.
Off the wall.
Do you know what? What a goal that would have been. You know, but Cody, I was made up for him as well. I was absolutely delighted for the lad, because he seems, you know, when you listen to the players talk after the game and things, he seems such an integral part of the team, doesn't he? Like the player that links everyone together. I think he's well, really well liked and really well loved at the club. I hope we do find a position for him where we can get the best out of him, you know?
I think, Pete, Tommy's made a good point there, hasn't he? Where, you know, a lot of fans, I wouldn't say a lot of fans, because I think the vast majority of fans who go to the game and what have you, yet, you know, you can get frustrated at times with a player. But, you know, sometimes, you know, other fans who maybe just follow the Reds and are fortunate enough to be able to get to the game, who follow him on Twitter, you know, don't really see, you know, the work he does off the ball and stuff like that. but he is a good player. And you know, every player, and I know, you know, I know in the early podcast we did, Tommy never liked me using the C word, the confidence word. You know what I mean? But all players sort of rely on being confident, don't they? And I just hope that, you know, that goal last night from Cody, and such a good goal that it was, and an important goal as well, that basically secured the 3 points, will give him that boost of confidence, you know, that he's possibly been lacking over the previous few weeks, that he can take into the remaining games this season, that could be massively important for Liverpool to achieve what we all want them to achieve over the next 7 or 8 weeks.
I think he's done well as in the fact that, like, he hasn't made many starts, and like Tom said, it's difficult to actually pin him down to a position. Is he a forward? Does he play like a false nine? Is he an attacking midfielder? He's a bit like a, not a jack of all trades, I don't want to say that, but he can play in various positions. But he's into double figures now, scoring, which is good. And like you say, it's his work rate, and I think that is appreciated by the other players. I think if you hand on heart, if everyone in that squad's fit, he probably doesn't get in the start in the 11. I can't see him starting up front, when Joss is fit as well, ahead of the lads that are there now. And I can't see him really starting in midfield, not certainly as a first choice. But there's going to be games, as I say. We've got, what is it now, 8, possibly 10, 12 games left, depending on European. And he's going to have to rotate the squad. And it could be, it could well be that the likes of the Gakpos of this world and the Harvey Elliotts of this world are going to, see us over the line at the end of the day. So, yeah, I was made up for him because there's no doubt in his enthusiasm, and he tries so hard. But as I say, to actually get a start, it's going to be interesting because, like Tom said before, we've got to start with our best 11 in these last few games. There's no real games where we can take our foot off the gas. So I think it's substitutions between now and the end of the season are going to be a real, they're going to be the turning point for us. They're going to make or break for us, really.
Yeah. So, Tom, I just want to ask you to go. You can go first tonight on this one. Who was your, and I think I know what the answer is, but who was your player of the match? And I think you've got nomination for Mike Wilson first, haven't you, Tom?
Yeah, my nomination for Mike Wilson is exactly the same as mine, really, Les, which was like, which, and I jumped the gun this morning, really, didn't I? I was getting excited while I was having a chat here this morning, you know, like before. And I think me nomination for man of the match, I thought Curtis, I gave Curtis an honourable mention because I thought his cameo role, for it's such an injury that he had, you're thinking, God, is he going to come back and need 4 or 5 games to get in? But like I said before, some players can come in and like sort of influence right away, and he looked the part, he really did. You know, like, and I think him and Robbo and Harvey Elliott and Cody, to be honest, improved the side no end. No, Joe Gomez had a good game, you know, Les, overall. No, he made a mistake, but I like Joe, and I think, you know, wherever he's asked to play, he gives his all. But you know, me and Lucio as well. But my man of the match is McAllister, and I feel terrible saying it again because you feel like you're just picking out one player all the time because I think he's a brilliant player. But I think if we're going to win the league, I think this we're going to be saying this lad's going to be man of the match quite a few more times before the end, the season finishes.
Pete, who's getting your nomination, mate?
Pretty much the same as Tom. I think all, like I said before, all four substitutes came on and all need mentioning, because when Harvey and Robbo came on the hour mark, Harvey sort of, it pepped us up a bit. We were passing the ball quicker. Robbo was making them runs down the left, the surging runs. And then Jones and Gakpo coming on, and obviously Gakpo crowning it with the goal. But like Tom, there was only one player for me this just outshone everyone, and that was McAllister again. Fantastic display.
Yeah, I mean, it's a full house. You know, an honourable mention for Kelleher, who with that save in the first few minutes, you know, which was really important, you know, deserves a mention. Although he didn't have shed loads to do during the game, you know, there's no denying that that save early doors, you know, was massively important to how the rest of the game went. And also an honourable mention again for Virgil, who was magnificent always. Put like you, there was one player who was just head and shoulders above everybody else on the field, and that was Alexis himself. And you know, I just hope he can continue that form for the rest of the season, because if he does, I think we'll all be sort of getting what we're all asking for in our prayers. I just want to ask you lads before we move on to look forward to the game against United on Sunday. We did the programme, and it's still available for people to listen to if there's any, you know, new listeners who haven't been following us and listening to the podcast for very long, where we named our best 50 Liverpool players in the last sort of 50 years. And I think I'll start with you on this one, Tom. Alexis McAllister, he'd be in that 50 now already, wouldn't he, Tom?
Jesus Christ, yeah. Do you know what, Les? You can see this. You can see why he's such an integral part of that Argentinian side. You know, like, it's funny, you know, he definitely would. How far up he'd be, oh, God only knows. I think what he does towards the end of this season, and then what he does, you know, for us in the coming years. I was talking to R. Kevin, and I always think with R. Kevin, out of all me lads, he's the quieter one. He's the more, you know, like he's the more astute on football and things. While I've always value our Liam Paul's opinion, but like Kevin, sometimes you get a bit of sense sometimes about. And he said to me, "Do you know what, Dad? He's turning into our Kevin De Bruyne." He said he does the stuff that De Bruyne can do. He can hold the ball, he can run with the ball, he can pass the ball, and he's starting to add goals to his game. He said, but you know what he does differently that De Bruyne doesn't do? He said, he wins the ball. He said, he wins the ball, he presses, he breaks down attacks. He said to me, he's the complete midfielder. You know, and I'm only hoping that, you know, because Jürgen, we all say that Jürgen gets the best out of all these our players. I'm only hoping that the new manager can get the best out of him like Jürgen can. But
yeah.
In the top 50, he definitely would be in there somewhere, wouldn't he?
I think you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, we've been lucky enough, our age bracket, we've been lucky enough to see, you know, from the 60s onwards, haven't we? Maybe the 70s for Les, he's a bit younger, but the 60s onwards. And there have been some great players. And like Tom said, if Alexis McAllister carries on in the same vein and can add hopefully the league title out, I mean, Holly was asking us earlier on when I was watching LFC TV, she said, if you give you the choice, Dad, is it going to be the league or the European trophy? And I said, the league all the time. I just want to win the league if I had the choice.
Yeah.
But if he can take us to that league title, or you know, or the Europa, or both, I say he. It's his form in the last month or 6 weeks that's really driven us on. And like you say, he's not head and shoulders height wise above people, but my God, his footballing prowess is brilliant. And like Tom said, he does some of the dirty stuff when he was playing in the number six. Getting a foot in and breaking play up, but he can now pick a pass out as well. And now he's adding goals to his game as well. I mean, when he first started early on in the season, he was sort of playing in the sixth role because of the injuries, etc. And people were doubting him. I think some people were doubting whether he was the right type of player for Liverpool. But I think he can take us on to another level, this lad. He's a fantastic player.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you both said there. You know, and I think Tom sort of used the phrase, I think, that that I think most people would agree with. He is the complete midfielder, isn't he? You know, if you think about it, he can pass, he can shoot, he can score, he makes goals, he can play in the six, he can play in the eight. So, and he can play equally as well in both positions. So what a player we've got on our hands. And like, the other thing is, he's very humble, isn't he? About, you know, he's not one of these players who, or people who struts around, you know, off the field. I mean, a funny story I heard, I don't know whether you've heard this, lads, but when he first signed for Liverpool and he was going into the Axis each day, some of the staff and some of the players started calling him Gary, and he didn't know why. And then it took him about 2 to 3 months to find out why they were calling him Gary. And he didn't like it, and he asked him to stop. But like, he did see the funny side of it, which shows he's got a really good character about him. And there was a little bit of an LFC TV special on when Ouattara Endo signed for Liverpool, and Endo's walking into the building and McAllister's walking down the stairs and says hello to him and stuff. And he asked him how he is, and he says, "Oh, don't worry, I'm new here too." So, you know, he comes across as such a nice fella as well, and he's really settled in and bought into what Liverpool is all about, and he's just a fantastic footballer. So, Pete, over to you. You've had your pen and paper at the ready. So, what have you come up with for your starting 11 for the big game on Sunday?
Right, so I'm not going to do any either ors tonight. I've just picked the 11. So Keller in goal. I've gone for Bradley, Virgil, Kwanzaa, and I've put Robbo in at left back to start. Endo should be fit enough to start again. So I've got Endo, Szoboszlai, and McAllister. And the front three, as per, really, Salah, Nunes, and Diaz.
Okay, Tom, what do you say to that?
I think he might play Canate at the back, Les, if he's fit. I think he might go with Canate and Virgil. I agree with Bradley and I agree with Robbo. I think he'll go with the midfield of Endo and Szoboszlai and Maka. And I think he'll go with the same front three. I'd be shocked if he changed the front three.
Yeah. I'll differ slightly, because I think Joe Gomez will start at right back. I think Connor's played two full games on the bounce now, and I think he'll be given a rest on Sunday. Joe Gomez will start at right back, and I think it'll be Canate alongside Virgil and Robbo at left back. And then the rest of the team, I agree with what Peter's sort of said. I think that Liverpool left Canate out at the weekend, specifically with the United game in mind. And I think what the plan would possibly be will be that Canate will play Sunday, and then next Thursday, Kwanzaa will come in and start at centre-back alongside Virgil in the game in the Europa League. And Connor could come back in then at right back to give Joe Gomez a rest. Mm. So I think that's where, and then hopefully when we come to the game against Atlanta, it'll be, you know, Trent, Jota and Alisson will all be back, you know, in the frame as well, you know, to boost the squad even more. So
I don't want to sound like Job's comforter with regard to Canate, but he took hell of a whack towards the end last night.
He did, yeah. I didn't realise that piece.
But, you know, it was a nasty tackle, lad. He followed through the lad on him. It was a nasty one.
It was very similar, Pete, wasn't it, to the little arms challenge on Virgil? Because he followed through.
Yeah, and he was down for a while, and Atwell sort of waved play on, because I think we had the ball at the time, but it was... I don't think he was, the lad wasn't booked or even spoken to, I don't think, but it really was a bad follow through. So I'm hoping I'm hoping there's no after effects for Canati on that, but I still think he might start Quanta on Sunday.
Yeah, Tom, just ask you for your prediction for Sunday.
Oh, Les. Do you know what? I'm going for 2-1 for Liverpool.
Okay, Pete?
I'm thinking 3-1 for Liverpool. I think we'll have learned our lesson the hard way in the cup game, and I think if we can put some more chances away. I mean, we had 29 shots again last night, only 9 on target. So we need to get that ratio up. But I think with the front line we've got and the form that McAllister and Szoboszlai is showing, he's starting to come.
Thought Szoboszlai played well as well last night,
Yeah,
Pete.
I think we can do them. So I'm going for 3-1.
Yeah, United have got a bit of an injury crisis at centre back, haven't he? Varane went off injured at half time last night. Martinez is already out, and Johnny Evans come on for him and only lasted 15 minutes. So they've only got Harry Maguire at the minute fit as the normal centre back. So what they will do at the back, I don't know. But I'm going to go for a 3-1 Liverpool win as well. You know, and if we can be top coming out of that game, you know, at the weekend, that will sort of put a little bit of a take a little bit of the air out of the the City and Arsenal camps as well, because they'll be looking at that as a potential game where we possibly slip up. So, but let's hope that both Brighton and Crystal Palace do us a favour at the weekend. And maybe if we do win on Sunday, we'll actually increase our lead at the top of the table, which would be absolutely brilliant going into, you know, the Crystal Palace game and then the three away games on the bounce. Just one thing before we finish, Tom, which I thought was quite funny. I don't know whether you've heard the news, but David Coote has been selected to represent the PGMOL at the Olympic Games.
Jesus,
right,
Jesus Christ.
As a VAR official. Right.
Jeez. Let's hope it. I'm just wondering, hopefully it'll be in the archery. They might fire a few shots at him.
You know what? And that's unbelievable, that, Les, isn't it?
Yeah.
And do you know what you've got to ask questions? You know, which moron selected them? It really is true, isn't it? You know, like, to be brutally honest, who would say, if you went and done a cross section of football supporters up and down the country in the Premier League, I reckon that this clown would come at the bottom of any list, wouldn't he? So you've got to ask yourself, who selected them to go forward to the Olympics? You know, like, it's just, honest to God, you think to yourself, it can't get any worse at the PGMOL, but then they just surpass themselves week by week. You know,
just on that subject, you know, choking apart now, I thought Atwell had a decent game last night.
Me too, Pete. I was going to say that, you know.
Yeah, he did.
He's usually fussy him.
Yeah, he's usually fussy, but he let a few things go last night. And as I say, the tackle on Canasa, you thought that should have been dealt with, but that a pass. I think he had a decent game last night, that one.
Yeah, our friend, by the way, Glenn Turner, Tom, who was a guest on the podcast a few months ago, when he heard that our friend Coote had been nominated for the to officiate the Olympics, he come out with a cracking tweet. He said, well, the Olympic Games are 4 years apart, so maybe within that four-year time, you know, David Coote will have enough time to make a decision if he's on VAR.
Honest to God.
We've got Taylor on Sunday, haven't we? Anthony Taylor.
Taylor,
so he can probably get the tram from Walsingham, as I put that in a thing the other day. How these Manchester referees get the Manchester games is beyond me, but that's another.
Do you know what story, though, Pete? I'm not bothered about Taylor, because I think he's probably the best of a really bad bunch, but I think he is.
Yeah, he's officiated at Old Trafford before, and I think he sent Pogba off, didn't he? I think it was him that sent Pogba off against us.
In the 5-1.
Yeah, it is just open that if there's any contentious decisions, And they go the way United, the first thing that's going to happen is, well, he's a Mancraft, you know. And but yeah, I'd probably agree with you. Out of all of them, I think he's actually probably better than Oliver now, to be honest. He
It
probably
will
is the
be
best.
interesting, Tom, if he keeps his cards in his pocket like he did last Sunday in the City Arsenal game on Sunday for both teams. If that's the way he's deciding to referee the game. You know what I mean? So that will be interesting to see how he handles it, because you give him a fair amount of praise for the way he sort of refereed that 115ers game against Arsenal last week.
Yeah, I think you know what we were saying, you and I, for the listeners who don't know, me and you have a conversation where we about it, and I'd said to you, you were saying about we wanted consistency because, Coutts booked everybody, and Taylor didn't book anyone, and I was saying, well, Taylor was the worst referee, and it should be. We should be following the example of Taylor, because he tried to let a top class game between two really good sides who didn't sort of match up to it on the day. He tried to let the game go, didn't he? And there was only a couple of times where he could have got his book out and booked people, but he didn't. He tried to let the game flow. And I think as football supporters, that's what you want, isn't it? You don't want to be looking at a referee and thinking to yourself, the referee is more important than, or he's the bigger talking points than the footballers. The football should always be, we should always be talking about the footballers, and the referees should be secondary, So I hope, like you, Les, I hope he does have a good game, and he's, I think he will. I can't see him. I don't buy into all this that he support. So if it was Tierney, I'd be if for want of a better word, if it was Tierney, I'd be shitting myself going into this weekend. But to be brutally honest, I'm expecting Taylor to have at least a decent game. I've nailed my colours to the mast. I'm going to get ripped on
Yeah.
the podcast at the
Yeah.
next podcast
He
as
better have
Taylor
now,
has a nightmare.
or your mate Jonathan will be after you again.
Oh my God, no, please, God.
Anyway, lads, thanks for that for tonight. We'll end this pod. We've got a Hillsborough special coming up, which will be released on the 15th, which we're hopefully going to be recording next week. We've got plans in place for that one. So listen out for that one. Listen out for the late flag after the Man United game on Sunday. Hopefully Tom will be joining us this time, because he will be keeping his teddy in the pram, because Liverpool will have won the game. And me and Pete will be on anyway, hopefully to discuss a good win for Liverpool that will keep us at the top of the Premier League table. On that note, I will end this podcast, as I always do, by saying justice for the 97, don't buy the sun, and you'll never walk alone. And until next time, see you soon.